Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Glowatz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, perhaps soon to be part of Tribune Publishing.
Yes. What a thought. Ben writing for the Tribune.
And then you could finally collaborate with John Cass.
Yeah, it's a collaboration everybody's been waiting for, like Simon and Garfunkel.
What a comparison. Today we're talking not about the imminent takeover of the Tribune by Sun-Times Media, but about Chicago Public Schools. And there's lots to talk about.
Yes.
What I've done to prepare for this is I came up with a chronology going back about half a year about some notable events that have taken place. I thought we'd just sort of step through them.
Okay.
And I'm just going to kind of reel them off, and you can interject at any point.
I actually have done a similar thing for upcoming columns, so great minds think alike.
Presaging. Mm-hmm. So let's start back in June of 2015. This is sort of foreshadowing this particular happening. Chicago Public Schools and the Chicago Teachers Union are reportedly in negotiations over a new teachers contract.
Uh-huh.
As the current contract expires at the end of June. Again, this is 2015. On June 23rd, Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis announces, quote, "We are literally this close to hammering out an agreement for a year," unquote. And I presume she was holding her thumb and forefinger very close together when she said that. However, 2 days later, on June 25th, the union announces that contract talks had broken off. CPS Interim Superintendent Jesse Ruiz says the union is, quote, "trying to roll back some of the increases that we've had in our classroom by lowering standards and evaluations for thousands of employees," unquote.
Yes.
CTU President Lewis says, quote, "their bargaining rhetoric is as empty as their bank accounts," unquote.
I love Karen, yeah. You have to think about Chicago politics as pre and post Laquan McDonald video. So this is pre-Laquan McDonald video.
It is a marker.
It is the marker at the moment. And just to remind our listeners who undoubtedly do not need this reminder, the video showed a police officer shooting Laquan McDonald as Laquan McDonald was moving away from the police officer, thus completely contradicting the official comment from the police department and the Fraternal Order of Police as to what had happened.
And listeners can go to our December interview where we talked about that in detail.
Yes. Okay. So anyway, Mayor Rahm's credibility has obviously been shaken since that video has been released. He's under siege. His approval ratings are plummeted. And the last thing he needs is to have a teacher strike. He wasn't feeling those pressures in the summer of 2015. And so it was pretty obvious that he had decided he was going to force the teachers to accept a contract that they didn't want to take. And he didn't really care if they went on strike. He may have wanted them to go on strike because that would perhaps, in his mind, enable him to finish them off once and for all.
Any insight as to why Chicago Public Schools had led the union sort of to the very edge of a deal and then it fell apart?
This is really one of the baffling things, trying to understand why the mayor does what he does. I don't know. And that, remember, that was just a one-year deal. That was just a one-year deal to get him through this contentious year when they're going to Springfield to get more money that Rahm says he needs to, first of all, wipe away the inequities that the system faces and also to balance the books. So they were going to go hand in hand with this deal. They'd have peace and they go hand in hand. And he called that off over the issue of the teacher's evaluation system that CPS has. And let me tell you, this was the subject of the article I wrote. The teacher evaluation system is disdained perhaps more by principals than teachers, as much as teachers dislike it, because it just is onerous paperwork dumped on principals to no real end. If you've talked to principals and they're speaking honestly and openly, they would say it's a big waste of time. I actually, over the Christmas break, spent some time watching a principal fill it out, and it is a waste of time.
Let me take you back a step. Previous to the current evaluation regime, if I'm not mistaken, the principal had to observe – their teacher several times a year. Am I correct?
Yes.
What is it now that makes it more onerous?
God, we could go down this path talking about the evaluation plan.
It's the Twitter version.
The Twitter version. It requires, I think, 4 classroom observations. It's not so much the observations that is onerous. It's the follow-up where the principals have to fill out all these computer forms. They're not actually paper. It's on a computer.
Use the same computer forms that the kindergartners use for standardized testing.
Right. Yeah. Everybody's filling out forms. And now, among the cuts, central office cuts that Mayor Rahm and his sidekick Forrest Claypool have made to free up money for the classroom, they've cut some of the people whose job it was, the bureaucrats whose job it was, to review the evaluations by the principals. So it just goes to show you how worthless, even in Rahm's mind, these evaluations were for. So why would he blow up the contract in order to save an evaluation process that he himself has so low regard for? It just shows you just out of
puzzling
and out of whack the mayor has been when it comes to the schools of Chicago.
Well, you just mentioned the value that having had a contract in hand would have been to going to Springfield for money leads us to our next point in time, which is August 10th, 2015. CPS announces a 2016 budget that's about $500 million short and a projected $1.1 billion budget deficit for 2017. The new CPS superintendent, Forrest Claypool, says, quote, "We cannot cut our way to a balanced budget. Unfortunately, if Springfield fails to do its part, we will be forced to close a $500 million gap later this year with a mixture of more unsustainable borrowing and even deeper cuts," unquote. And he's making a reference to Springfield doing its part. And what he means by that is he maintained that CPS students receive an average 26% less in state education funding per pupil than students in the rest of the state. Furthermore, Claypool said that the state contributes only $31 per student towards CPS pension obligations, whereas other districts in the state receive an average of $2,300.
First of all, as I just got finished saying, it would have been a lot more effective had Claypool and Emanuel forged an alliance with the Chicago Teachers Union as they went to Springfield to deal with these problems, these inequities, okay? So, again, strategically, I don't understand why they would blow up the country. We cannot forget what happened in June when we think about what he says in August. It's just a disconnect there. Secondly, the problem of the inequity in funding is a very real one. Lefties like me have been railing about it for years, and our old friend Edna Pardo was talking about this in the 80s. And people like Forrest Claypool and Rahm were ignoring it all those years. And Mayor Daley ignored it as well. Chicago is relatively flush, as I've said many times, in the 90s with property tax haul that was a result of the bubble, or the actually it was probably a strong real estate market in the 90s, the bubbles and the O's. But the point is that as long as they had the money, they didn't really care about these larger inequities. And furthermore, they didn't want to delve too much into the whole state funding system because they were scamming it with the TIF program.
They didn't want to invite scrutiny.
Right, because part of the state aid that they were receiving was being offset by money they were diverting to the TIF program, a sleight of hand that sort of everybody knew was going on, but pretended as though it didn't exist.
And Ben is here talking about tax increment financing, whereby some of Cook County and Chicago taxpayers' property taxes are skimmed into special development funds.
Yes, and Barbara Flynn Curry, as we talked about before, the state rep from Hyde Park, who's very close to Michael Madigan, the House Speaker, essentially pointed this out to Mayor Emanuel and his aldermanic allies at a hearing last fall, or I forget when it was, November, I think it was, a city council education hearing, where she said in so many words, you're not getting money for Springfield, so you have to find your own money, and there's plenty of money to be found. One of the things is your TIF program. Mayor Emanuel and Forrest Claypool want the TIFs off the table, so to speak, when they discuss this state financing formula and bringing in more state money from Chicago. So they're not being completely candid when he makes comments like going to Springfield to do away with these inequities.
And Representative Curry has introduced something else with regard to what you just said, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But just moving forward in time now from August to December of 2015, that is when Chicago Teachers Union members overwhelmingly vote to authorize a strike, should it be needed. So that seems to be a line in the sand. Moving now into this year, 2016, On January 15th, Moody's Investors Service lowers CPS's bond rating to two levels below junk status, which they call B+. Which, you know, where I come from, B+ is pretty good, but yeah. Not in bonds.
Yeah, obviously, you don't come from Wall Street.
I don't. Iowa Street, actually. 2 weeks later, Moody's lowers the rating to four levels below junk status. And that's from a high of junk status back in 2015.
Just hearing this is disgraceful. I have to say, ROM won't take the hard hit by providing the money that the school system needs to pay its basic bills. He won't raise the taxes that he has available, or he won't find new sources of revenue that he has available. Instead, he continually goes to Wall Street to borrow money to pay the basic bills. Wall Street, seeing that Chicago's like on the ropes, just keeps raising the interest rates so that more of the money that we pay in taxes goes to pay off interest on loans to keep the schools afloat, and it just perpetuates itself.
I should add that one of the reasons that the financial industry is painting such a dark picture of Chicago Public Schools finances and the city of Chicago's finances is because they have what you just mentioned. They have outstanding obligations to debt that they've racked up over the years. And secondly, they have underfunded pension obligations that are literally in the billions of dollars.
That's correct. And Rahm, let's remember, he's now in his fifth year as mayor?
Correct.
He should have dealt with this very early on. He wasted so much time at war with the union, a frivolous war that he created, that he perpetrated, that he kept going throughout the entire 4 years. And when you look back, I know your timeline is from the summer, but go back to his first fight, which had to do with increasing the school day, forcing that on the teachers union, forcing that on parents, forcing that on principals, forcing it across the board when there was no money for it. You know, we're borrowing money to increase the school day so we don't have programs to have quality time with the extra time. It's just like such a bizarre and cynical and manipulative way to run the schools without sort of any regard whatsoever for like a long-term strategy. I would say that his first objective with the public schools was to confront the money problems it had so that we could stop having to borrow money to pay basic bills. And that would require a tax hike or a source of other revenue besides the property taxes.
Such as financial transaction tax or taxing marijuana.
Legalizing and taxing marijuana. Both of those would have been easier to achieve, as difficult as they are to achieve, back in 2012 because we had a Democratic governor. But we frittered away his time in a silly war with the union that was intended, in my opinion, to promote his political career and nothing to do with saving the public schools of Chicago. And now here we are. His political career is pretty much ruined by his policies of his first term, and we're having to borrow more and more money. I wouldn't doubt if Rahm left government altogether and went to work in Wall Street and had the last laugh.
Some would like to see that happen sooner rather than later. Well, evidently, some state officials share your opinion of management of Chicago Public Schools, because on January 20th of this year, state Republican office holders hold a press conference about Chicago schools. First, state legislators announced that they'll introduce legislation that allows a state takeover of CPS and would allow CPS to declare bankruptcy. That same day, Governor Bruce Rauner places blame for CPS's financial problems on the doorstep of Mayor Rahm Emanuel. And you wrote about this in a blog post on January 21st, titled, "With CPS Takeover Proposal, Rauner Tries to Take Rahm Down With Him." And here are a couple of things that Rauner said.
Chicago's public schools are in financial crisis. This has been a crisis long in the making. The mayor has been in office for almost five years. He has not dealt with a financial crisis in Chicago public schools. And his message to us in state government has been for months, we have a crisis. We need $500 million. We want the state to give it to us. That's not a reasonable message. It's not a reasonable request.
He's failed on schools. He's failed on jobs in the neighborhoods. He's failed on taxes. He's failed on reforms. And I'm tired of it.
To which Mayor Emanuel responded,
"This is an important issue, and I compliment him for trying to move something forward. I think yesterday illustrated that when it comes to trying to build the relationships, the trust, to trying to work on a serious issue, and I compliment him for trying to take the issue on, he has become and becomes his own worst enemy, can't get out of his own way. I believe a budget would be done. But, you know, remember, this is a governor who called the Supreme Court corrupt. And so I don't think calling people names, attacking them, I mean, my one recommendation, if he wants one, is rather than attack people, attack the problems. And don't do it in a way that destroys the ability, since these are big challenges, are big and tough enough, that make it tougher for people to try to work with you and try to reach an agreement. And so you can call me names all you want, and you can attack me, but attack the problems of Illinois, which I think would be a better idea.
Sounds kind of reasonable on the part of the mayor, wouldn't you say?
What a spectacle. First of all, let's just deal with the Rauner part where he like stole lines from my columns.
What flattery.
Yeah, what flattery. Rauner was with Rahm, an ally of Rahm, in those first 2 years when time was a-wasting in that war on the unions and the war on the teachers approach that Rahm took. In fact, Rauner insisted Rahm didn't go far enough. If you recall, after the strike, Rauner started accusing, he didn't come right boldly say it, that Rahm caved in. He's sort of later become more forceful in that area, but he was suggesting it strongly that Rahm should have been stronger, should have forced the teacher to accept cuts and closed more schools and retreated from spending money in the public schools.
Now, let's not forget that this was before Rauner was campaigning to be governor. He did have a government position, which was appointed at that point.
Yeah, Rauner was very much a part of this crowd. I believe his wife was on the transition team that Rahm had on education. Rauner was a supporter of Rahm.
And Rauner's appointed position was World Business Chicago.
Yeah, it was World Business Chicago. Yeah, so Rauner's part of this crowd. I was looking back through some old stuff, but going all the way back in a chronology to Daley's Olympic efforts, Rauner kicked in over $100,000 to support that. What a waste of money that was. Rauner, his company had contracts managing teacher pension funds when Blagojevich was the governor. So the notion that Rauner could sit there with a straight face and criticize Rahm for frittering away time is absurd. He's part of the same party, if you will. You know, this thing where Rahm is restrained and I'm going to be the adult and I'm not going to call names. And he's the guy who forced a fight with Karen Lewis by dropping the F-bomb on her and wouldn't talk to her for 2 years. So, you know, I struggle with this whole ritual between Rahm and Rauner on schools. Are they really fighting? Are they really at odds? Or is it just some kind of
theatrics?
And, you know, we talk about this all the time at the Hideout. It's an ongoing joke. And most of the people at the Hideout think that it's just theatrics and it's Rahm's in on it and he's letting Rauner get away with it. I don't think so. I think it's a little more of a split. I think that Rauner really wants the system to go bankrupt. He thinks that's a good strategy to follow. And I don't think Rahm wants it to go bankrupt, at least on his watch. If it goes bankrupt when he leaves, what does he care? You know, I mean, he supported Daley. All these, again, our chronology should go back to the 90s when Daley seized control of the public schools and then began to use money that was supposed to go to pensions to pay other things instead of increasing taxes to pay for both. So he took on more obligations than he could pay for. Rahm and Rauner were part of the people cheering him on, and along with the Chicago Tribune's editorial board, as I love pointing out, who are now criticizing Rahm for the management of the public schools. They were all cheering on Daley as he led us to this precipice.
And you can point this out when you're writing for the Tribune.
Yeah, I could point it out when I'm writing for the Tribune.
You and Cass could have a conversation like Kristen McQuarrie and Eric Zorin.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, Cass, I mean, as long as you're raising the Tribune, the hierarchy or whatever you want to call it of like bad writing out of the Tribune on this subject, I wouldn't even put him at the top of the list. I don't know who writes these things, but the editorial, the great McDumkey always teases me that I'm the only one who reads the Tribune's editorials, so I'm the only one who can discuss them.
There are two people in the room that read the editorials.
Okay.
But I'm not counting your dog.
So it's the editorial board is out of their mind, and Cass doesn't really pay attention to this stuff.
Well, let's move on in our timeline. We mentioned Illinois House Majority Leader Barbara Flynn Curry earlier. On January 21st, the day after Rauner made his comments that we just heard, Curry and other lawmakers announced a bill called the Distressed Schools TIF Surplus Act. And this bill aims to use money in the city of Chicago's tax increment financing accounts that are not already tied to debt service or an active project, and give that money to CPS. And never mind that almost half that money came from property taxes originally intended for other public bodies. It's kind of an interesting piece of legislation.
Yes, it is. It's robbing from the slush fund to give to the schools from whom you robbed the first time.
It's kind of a Robin Hood thing.
It's a Robin Hood thing. One would think that before the mayor went to Wall Street to pay exorbitant interest rates to borrow hundreds of millions of dollars to pay off obligations that he says he has to make just to keep the schools open, you would think that to avoid those kinds of interest charges, he would seek every nickel he had to pay off obligations so we could get through this next couple of years without adding the burden. And the obvious place to go is this $400 million a year, every year. So it's not a one-time deal. They always love to say, oh, this is just a one-time. No, next year, $400 million more is going to roll in, or $500 million. I don't know.
You're talking about the tax increment financing.
But he won't do it. He insists that all the money is obligated for, except for maybe like $100 million. Or there's always some artificial number that he concocts. And then when people say, well, show us the contracts, show us the books, he doesn't show you the books. He doesn't show you the contracts. He tells you, fill out a FOIA and see where that gets you.
Alternatively, his budget director, Alex Holtz, says, no, it's right there online. You can see how it's obligated.
Yeah, okay. We've already discussed that.
We have.
When she appeared on the Ken Davis show.
And Tom Tresser is still, as far as I know, going after that.
Yeah, he's in FOIA hell going after that. But you would think that the city would voluntarily, on its own, have hearings, let's say, and pore over these documents so we could determine once and for all how much is available so we don't have to increase our financial obligations by paying more in interest.
What is the new city council budget analyst doing?
Nothing, okay? We could just write that. That was a joke.
I haven't heard anything about
that. No, he's hiding. Why would he? Would you get in the middle of this fray? Someone will get mad at you. So maybe you can borrow money against the stream of TIF. Every year, $400 million comes in.
Been suggested.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to give up that money, and he doesn't want to give up that control, and we just borrow more. The real leftists out there at the crowd, at the hideout, say it's all part of a scheme and a scam to bankrupt everybody, and so we fall further in debt to Wall Street.
That's a possibility.
That's a possibility that I have a hunch that you may share with some of those leftists. You might, in fact, be one of the leftists at the hideout.
No comment.
No comment, yeah.
Well, let's move forward in time then. This will seem like deja vu. On January 28th of this year, CPS reaches a tentative contract deal with CTU negotiators. The deal reportedly involves teacher raises, teachers increasing their pension contributions, so CPS makes less pension contributions, CPS capping the number of charter schools, and preserving a system of raises for teachers who get extra education and extra experience. CTU announces that it will take the deal to its big bargaining team, comprised of 40 members, for approval. But on February 1st, CTU's big bargaining team unanimously rejects the tentative deal with CPS. The union says that it doesn't believe CPS has taken the steps needed to ensure the revenues required for the deal. The union wants CPS to terminate interest rate swaps with banks and the siphoning of property taxes to tax increment financing districts, as we just discussed. And it wants the school system to work with the union towards a financial transaction tax. Critics of the union's rejection of the contract say that the union's leadership is out of touch with its members by presenting a deal that the membership representatives unanimously rejected. Others say that it shows that the union is got more of a democratic structure rather than an autocratic structure. Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, the notion is that Karen Lewis, the head of the teachers union, should take the deal and force her teachers to accept it. The last teacher union president who did that was a woman named Deborah Lynch. She was the one who said, oh God, let me see if I can get this quote correct. This contract not only brings in the bacon, it brings in the whole hog. I think it was something like that. She probably said it way more artfully than
I. She was emphatic.
Yeah. And the union emphatically voted down the contract. This is in 2004, I want to say. So she had to go back and renegotiate with then Arne Duncan and get something that barely passed, and the union voted her out. So it's not as easy as it may look for a union leader to force teachers to accept a contract from the Board of Ed, particularly when they're effectively, at best, over 4 years, breaking even. Whatever money they're losing up front now will eventually be made up with small raises down the pike, but they'll be making the same amount of money, basically, maybe a little less, 4 years from now as they're making now. So that's asking a lot for them. in the face of 4 years of just constant battles with the Board of Ed, if you're going to analyze the strategy of the teachers union, I think the question is, why did Karen Lewis and her top aides give folks a sense that there might be hope for approving the deal? I think they were doing two things. One, they were trying to get a more accurate assessment of where the rank and file stood on the contract. And two, they were also setting themselves up like, hey, I can't do anything. My people don't want this. So they can go back and negotiate. Remember, this is a negotiation.
So preserving their sort of stature at the bargaining table?
Yeah. It's like, my people have spoken. They don't want this. So it just reinforces the threat that there could be a strike. You got to give us something a little better.
So the next couple of days after that involves volley of sort of counterattacks. On February 2nd, CPS Superintendent Forrest Claypool sends a letter to the union announcing that CPS will, one, no longer pick up the teachers' pension contributions, which the law allows them to do, saving $130 million annually, two, start layoffs of school staff to save $50 million, and three, repurpose certain federal funding that, quote, will result in reduction in general education funding to the schools while having no significant overall funding impact on school budgets, end quote.
Yeah, okay.
Claypool later said that, quote, school support staff will be disproportionately affected, unquote. The next day, February 3rd, the union withdraws nearly $1 million from its account at Bank of America, protesting what it called toxic interest rate swaps that the bank sold to Chicago Public Schools. That day was a rather busy day because later that day, Governor Bruce Rauner injected the state again into Chicago's education system. First, after revelations that the rejected teacher contract deal would have involved a $200 million property tax increase in Chicago to pay off the pension debt, Rauner called that, quote, ruinous, unquote. Rauner said, quote, we cannot allow the mayor and his friends in the General Assembly to do that. That day, Rauner also announces that he's directed the Illinois State Board of Education to prepare for a state takeover of Chicago Public Schools. And these preparations include a review of CPS finances and a search for an interim superintendent. Critics say, on the mild side, that the previously announced change in state law would never pass the General Assembly. And on the wilder side, some critics say that Rauner deliberately is posturing to make bond financing even harder for CPS than it already is, as you mentioned earlier.
I guess I'm with the second critic.
Well, later that same day, CPS sells $725 million in 28-year municipal bonds at yields of 8.5%, which is an enormous deal for investors. I almost ran out. And
yeah, unfortunately, I think you have to buy them in $5,000 chunks.
Which is why I didn't run out.
You ran out, but then you ran back.
And this is hugely expensive for Chicago taxpayers. And I should add that CPS originally reportedly wanted to sell $1.2 billion in bonds, but its bond managers apparently said, nope, you ain't going to be able to sell that much. But lest you think that that amount, $725 million, is still lots of money, the Tribune reports that repaying the bond investors will cost taxpayers $1.8 billion, mm-hmm. over twice what the city is borrowing in bonds.
You're effectively paying, wow, twice as much money.
The Trib also reports that this year, CPS will pay $538 million in debt service alone for the $6.2 billion it already owes. So this, you know, $725 million extra borrowing is kind of a proverbial drop in the bucket.
Yes. What can be said about this that hasn't already been said, Dave?
It's like the icing.
Yeah, it's the icing on the cake. The leftists at the Hideout would say this is the intent all along. It's criminal. It's criminal. It could have been avoided. It could have been avoided as recently as 2011 when Mayor Rahm came into office. As I said earlier, instead of waging a war with the teachers union and trying to play the same game that Rauner is playing, that's what they're doing. They're playing games. They're looking for scapegoats that they think the public will buy as an enemy. And they're trying to turn the teachers union into that enemy so that the public will, you know, support massive cuts and maybe even in this case, bankruptcy and then a takeover by, I don't know, maybe they're going to put the guy who ran the Flint, Michigan waterworks in charge. I don't know.
We don't know where it'll lead. It's truly a puzzler.
I can guarantee one place it will lead, more money for people who lend money to Chicago's broke public schools.
This recent deal shows that.
Yes, and less money for the classrooms of Chicago public schools. Everybody involved will say they're doing it for the best interest of the children, but I just don't see how in the world anybody would buy that assertion from Ron or Aram at this point.
Well, as we often do, we'll have to leave it on that pessimistic note.
Oh, my God. Can I tell a joke or something? It's so gloomy, but really, what can you do to avoid it?
Yeah. Well, Ben, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, sir.
Listeners, you can learn about not only our audio reporting, but our written reporting on your social media or online. Search for Inside Chicago Government. Our Twitter handle is CHIGOVT. I'm Dave Gloetz. Thanks for listening. Set the bot to...